did you do to the Dodgers?
Yeah, they broke a little bit. They've lost 6 out of 8 now. And last night, they get to extras with the Cincinnati Reds after Corey Seager tied the game up in the 7th inning with a 2-run homer. Then, top of the 10th, Kenley Jansen, runner on second, of course, gave up the big home run that gave the Reds the 5-3 victory. There's booing for Kenley.
Been the best reliever they have.
That's the problem. He has been the best guy they've got. He's thrown 10 and a third innings. He's got a 2.61 ERA, a .06 whip. He did lose that game last night. He's 5 of 6 on save opportunities. So he really is the most reliable go-to guy they have, which I think for a lot of people is a little scary.
I think that 5 of 6 is misleading because doesn't he have 2 losses?
He only has 1 loss.
Okay. Well, last night he got the loss, right?
He's only got 1 loss.
Well, that's right, because the other game he let the game
become tied. Corey Knebel lost the game, right. Yeah. Corey Knebel did.
Yeah, I think there's something to what you brought up yesterday, and I know this because of my Lakers background, is that you said it yesterday, these aren't the Dodgers. I'm not going to I know they've lost 6 out of 8, but Mookie Betts didn't play in 4 of those games. Cody Bellinger hasn't played in any of them. You mentioned Knebel's out. I'd like to see the starters go a little bit deeper into the game so we don't have to go to that bullpen, but I don't know if that's realistic. I just think it's too early to worry, don't you think?
I think it's way too early to worry, but I'll tell you this much about the bullpen. Kenley has been pretty damn good this year. He gave up the home run last night, lost the game. He threw a bad pitch, right?
Plus, I always say he doesn't pass the eye test. This year, he kind of does. Like, he's some movement on his cutter, and it looks pretty good.
Yeah, and he's hitting 93, 94, he hit 97 a couple of times. But right. Corey Knebel, who was kind of in that super reliever role, I always say the closer isn't the toughest job. The toughest job is that guy that comes in the 7th with 2 runners on, or that guy that comes on in the 8th with 1 on and nobody out. Those are the tough jobs. So they've got Corey Knebel, who is going to be in that role. He's out for months, says Dave Roberts, with a strained lat. David Price is on the injured list, but he's given up 6 runs in 10 innings. He hasn't been very good at all.
Here's a crazy idea. Tell me what you think of it.
Okay.
You move Dustin May up to the 4th starter because he's been really good. And not that Julio Urias has been bad. He's actually been good.
He's been arguably the best.
But why not move him into the role he was in the World Series to cover those innings that you're worried about, the 7th and 8th innings, because he's pretty, pretty good at that. Make David Price just went on the 10-day DL. He didn't go on the
10-day IL, yeah.
So make David Price the 5th starter, who's better than most teams' 5th starters. Urias becomes the guy to pitch in the 7th and the 8th, and Kenley goes to the 9th. What do you think?
Boy, is that taking full advantage of Julio Urias, who arguably has been the best starting pitcher they've got?
But he won't be. At the end of the year, it'll probably be Walker Buehler or Trevor Bauer or Clayton Kershaw that catches up. I think that, like, Urias, I mean, he can
only... He is 3-0, John.
I know, but he pitched those key innings in the World Series last year. I think your need is greater in the 7th and 8th than it is for a 5th starter.
It's an interesting idea. So you're saying flop David Price into the rotation and Julio Urias into the bullpen as
and
sort of
Price,
that super reliever guy.
If Price continues to struggle, I think Tony Gonsolin's coming back eventually. You could move him into that 5th starter role. Wasn't he a starter for a long time?
Jimmy Nelson was a starter, and when he's in the game, I'm not comfortable. When Dennis Santana's in the game, I'm not comfortable.
When do we get Joe Kelly back? I like Joe Kelly for an inning.
Yeah, Joe Kelly,
100 miles an hour.
It's a bit of a mystery exactly what's going on with Joe Kelly. He's expected to pitch this year, is what I've heard. Expected to pitch this year, but I don't know exactly when. By the way, Brisdar Graterol has not been good. He's just off the IL, and he's just getting started this year. But I'll tell you, the thing about him, remember I've talked about this. Brisdar Graterol pitches to contact. And one of the reasons, and Oral pointed this out last night, is that he's really got to develop his breaking ball. Because he is just fastball, fastball, fastball. He's got to develop a breaking ball in order for him to be a wipeout reliever. So he's not there yet either. I don't feel good with him in the game. The guys that have been good, Scott Alexander has been very good. Victor Gonzalez has been very good.
I was just going to say.
Blake Treinen has been pretty good. He's got a 3 ERA. And Kenley. So I think I feel most comfortable with Alexander, Gonzalez, Treinen, and Kenley Jansen.
Even
but Jimmy Nelson, Dennis Santana, Brisdar Graterol, not at all.
Mace, even with this streak, even having lost 6 of 8, they're still in first place.
Yes, yes.
You know, you got to look at the big picture here at some point. Now, are they struggling? Sure. But they're going to get guys back. They're going to be good. So maybe they don't win 115 games, but they're going to win 100, and they're going to win the division. You just got to wait till you get some of your guys back.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's ultimately. I mean, they're playing without Bellinger. Lux came back last night. Lux actually laced a ball to right. He actually looks pretty good. He looked ready and back. So, yeah, but I mean, the pieces aren't there. They're missing Zach McKinstry. We're seeing guys like Luke Rayleigh out in left field. It does a nice job.
Yeah, but like him and Noisy, and who's the LA kid that played center the other day?
DJ Peters. Yeah, he got those shipped three, to the alternate
those three
side.
Guys aren't going to be, you know, getting major innings when the season's on the line.
Yeah, I mean, they are fringe players. I mean, nice players, but fringe players. They're not going to be the guys that the Dodgers rely on. But 6 out of 8 is a little bit scary. I mean, it's not scary. Yeah, it's scary. I guess it's scary.
Well, you got to remember that the majority of those were to the Padres, who are a good team. The Reds started really good and have kind of come back to earth, but they're still like 14-7 or something, right?
No, the Reds are pretty good. The Reds actually lead baseball in home runs and stolen bases.
Yeah, so, you know, it's not the
By the way, think about that. They lead the league in home runs and stolen bases.
Well, here's the thing about stolen bases. I'm glad you brought this up. You know, the Padres are second in stolen bases.
Right, yeah, they run.
So I think, you know, you always talk about how analytics at its core, you know, there are some people like, oh, analytics, blah, blah, blah.
Analytics, oh,
really,
analytics,
really all
thing.
Analytics are is trying to find a statistical edge that you can exploit.
Sure.
That's it. I think that running stolen bases have become that there are teams now that are running in a league where running has not been encouraged or even tolerated. And now all of a sudden it's making a difference. Like that game, the 8-7 game, the Padres won. The way they scored was they put their runners in motion. They stole on a double steal, second and third, and got that guy home.
Yeah, I mean, they were playing.
So it's a good club to have in your bag.
I saw him hit and run. Now, we don't really have necessarily – that's not necessarily going to be our game.
Well, Betts is fast. Bellinger is fast. Bellinger might be the fastest guy on the team, believe it or not. So that's why that leg injury is serious. But,
yeah.
You know, you've got some guys that can run, but –
But what it does is it puts pressure on the pitchers. They do move runners up in the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, matter of fact, when Tatis stole that base, I think it was off Nelson, they didn't even throw it. I mean, he just stole it off the pitcher.
Well, I think last night they said the Dodgers have allowed more stolen bases than any team in baseball. They've allowed 27 stolen bases and only thrown out 5 guys.
So that's the edge. That's the edge that teams have found that they can exploit against the Dodgers.
Yeah, yeah. I thought last night they were, you know, Corey Seager got him back into the game. It was a good ball game to watch. It was a fun game. Corey Seager got him back into it, and I love extras. I get really excited about that. Unfortunately, did not go our way. Kenley gave up that home run. Now, the Lakers, meanwhile, took care of business last night. They did exactly what they needed to do.
Although they were behind at the end of the third quarter to a really
bad
Orlando team.
They had that crazy second quarter where Orlando throw down a 40 spot?
Yeah, and so, again, until LeBron comes back, they're going to be like, tomorrow night's going to be a hard game to win. Washington's playing really well. They've won 8 out of 9 games. They lost an overtime game last night, a crazy game, 146-143. Where Bradley Beal scored 45 points. But it's going to be hard. If they don't play defense, Beal and Westbrook has something like 21 triple-doubles in his last 25 games. He's averaging a triple-double. Westbrook and Beal could really light you up. So hopefully they can Schroeder was unbelievable.
He was great. He was great.
I mean, he was that was as good of a game as he has played as a Laker. And by the way, I don't know if people are even aware – of how great he was coming down the stretch. Schroeder, I think he assisted on 16 of the last, scored or assisted on 16 of the last 18 Lakers points.
Wow.
You know, which for him is just, you know, is ridiculous. That's great.
Meanwhile, this is interesting, John. Dennis Schroeder last night after the game, did you hear what he said?
No.
Jorge, go to the sound page and then give me the thing that's in red, Dennis Schroeder.
Hey, I know, but I mean, it's probably the Lakers organization who's going to tell you guys. I mean, he's close. I can tell you that much. So we can't wait to for him to get, you know, get back, help us, you know, win games again and be together, you know, at the right time with like 10 games in, 11 games in. And then, like I said, get to work.
There you go. There's Dennis Schroeder. He says LeBron James is close. LeBron James is close.
I was always targeting the beginning of May.
Yeah.
I think it may be a little past that.
You do.
But I do think he is going to play in these last 11 games before the playoffs start. And, you know, really all the thing that most Laker fans want is they want a healthy full squad when the playoffs start. Now, that's a question, when the playoffs are going to start. So if they can avoid the play-in tournament, they got some help from Sacramento last night. Sacramento beat Dallas. So Portland and Dallas are the teams we're watching. They both play again tonight. If they got to play in the play-in tournament, the playoffs start on May 17th. If they don't, they start the weekend of the 22nd. The Lakers are probably a Sunday team that would go to the 23rd. So they can buy themselves a week if they can stay out of that play-in tournament. With 11 games left, the Lakers are, you know, two games ahead of Dallas and three games ahead of Portland. If they can finish in the top six, they can avoid it. And I now think that would be significant. I think that if they can avoid it, it would be a really good thing.
I've got actually some good news. This is Woj. LeBron James could return as soon as this week, sources tell Adrian Wojnarowski. James has looked strong in his ramp-up workouts on the Lakers' current road trip.
Well, Woj, his sources are often clutch. So that's rock solid. You can take that to the bank.
LeBron could return as soon as this week.
So
they've got two games left this week, right?
Right. Well, I shouldn't say I doubt it. I don't know anything. So, I mean, it wouldn't like completely floor me if he played tomorrow night. But they play Friday against Sacramento and then again Sunday.
Right. So, Washington, Sacramento. Yeah, Washington's been really good. Washington's been really good. Westbrook has been crazy.
Better pick, they're in the play-in tournament now. So here's the games coming up after the watch. They play Washington tomorrow.
Yep.
Then it's Sacramento Friday, Toronto Sunday. Toronto's tanking. They've been really bad.
Yep.
Denver Monday, which could be a big game because that's the first-round playoff opponent. If the season ended today, I wonder if Denver might tank that game just because they don't want to show the Lakers anything.
Right.
Which the Lakers would gratefully take. Because, you know, they're trying to stay out of it. And then after that, the Clippers in Portland. So those are the four games next week.
Portland, by the way, is the team that they are. Isn't Portland in the seven right now?
Correct. And can't walk one foot in front of the other. They've lost 9 of 11 games. Damian Lillard's really cold. They're really, really struggling.
But that, John, beating Portland might be the difference in getting that getting out of the play-in tournament.
Correct.
If they beat Portland and knock them back a game and gain a game on them, that might be critical. So Portland's stumbling right now, but a win for the Lakers.
Big games over
the
next really week and a half.
Yeah. All right, John, coming up next. Oh, by the way, I got some really exciting news today. I'm really excited about it. It's about SoFi Stadium.
Okay.
Plus, some very dark news from Kyle Shanahan. Very dark news. That's coming up next for you. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
So there I am, minding my own business today, reading my email, and I get this. We are invited, me and Juan, to SoFi Stadium for the Global Citizen Vax Life concert on Sunday. It's a big national thing. It's going to be nationally televised. It's hosted by Selena Gomez. It stars J-Lo, Eddie Vedder, Foo Fighters, and Her will all perform. And also making appearances will be Harry and Meghan. I believe he is formerly a prince. Ben Affleck, Chrissy Teigen, David Letterman, Gail King, Jimmy Kimmel, Olivia Munn, Sean Penn. List goes on and on. So we get to go inside SoFi Stadium to see an event.
Do you get your seats?
I don't think so. I think the stage faces the opposite direction
okay, so
of our
about
seats.
Several months ago, Mason and I used our vast connections.
Yes.
Which is, those of you
Kevin.
Who listen to the show know are
Kevin
very
Demoff.
Thin. Yeah, we basically called Kevin Demoff and said, hey, if we wear masks, can we come over there and tour the stadium? And Kevin said, yeah, I'll show you around. And he took us to Mason's seats. And there are very few times in life where you pay as much money as you did for those seats, but they actually exceed expectations. I mean, you knew when you bought these they were pricey, but I think when you saw where they were,
yep.
It was like, okay, this is a feeling I had for you. This is totally worth it. This is going to be a perfect spot to watch the Rams and like select other things
yep.
that come down the pike in the stadium. So you're right. I'm very excited for you. I think that's really cool.
Living my best life, man. Going ever. You get your two shots. You just go and you do it.
Okay. So I had my second shot yesterday.
Oh, yeah. How is it going? How do you feel?
So I was very, very, as you know, I do nothing in moderation ever.
Correct.
So I was very paranoid. And I have a friend who's a trainer, who's an athletic trainer. And he had Pfizer like I did. And he goes, look, man, here's what I did. I drank a ton of Gatorade and a ton of water all day before my shot.
Okay.
So I drank probably 4 Gatorades and at least 5 16-ounce bottles of water.
Wow.
I was like uncomfortably hydrated. Bloated is a good word. But I woke up this morning. I had a headache. I felt like I had a little bit of a cold. I'm sitting here. I'm now like 27 hours after, and I feel great. I think my guy is on to something.
Nice.
You just drink a lot of Gatorade and a lot of water, and other than the headache, I think I'm fine.
Yeah, I think the people, I think it's hard to explain who's going to get sick on the second shot and who's not. Like, my mom, 70.
Lisa, my wife, got super sick.
My mom, 78 years old, or 79, something like that. She's in the upper 70s, I think, like the weather today. And she had nothing, but not stepdad Leo was down in bed for a day. So it's sort of random who actually gets hit by this stuff.
Right, but it's worth doing. I'm glad I did it. And now, I mean, did you see President Biden today said, unless you're in a large crowd of strangers, so this probably won't work for sporting events, but in all other walks of life, you don't have to wear a mask outside anymore.
Woo woo!
So unless you're in a large group of strangers, you can kind of...
We're getting there, people. Yeah. We are getting there.
So what's the Kyle Shanahan story?
So Kyle Shanahan doing a press conference yesterday, and everybody knows that the Niners are kicking the tires on any of these five quarterbacks.
They're taking Mac Jones. It's a big smokescreen. They're taking
Mac Jones.
100%.
Yesterday, Kyle Shanahan was asked in his press availability, will Jimmy Garoppolo be on the roster on Sunday?
I can't guarantee that anybody in the world will be alive Sunday, so I can't guarantee who will be on our roster on Sunday. So that goes for all of us.
Does he know something?
Is there an asteroid
hurtling towards Earth?
That's the Les Snead dodge.
It is.
That means Jimmy Garoppolo will be traded within a week, don't you think?
I think he'll be traded in this draft.
Right. I think that is code for... If you weren't going to trade Garoppolo, I would have responded to that question with how you responded. I would have said to the reporter, unless you know something I don't, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be on the roster. But he went the other way. He said, you can't guarantee, Mace, you and I can't guarantee tomorrow. There is no guarantee that we will not be hit by a bus later today and life will end.
Yeah, no guarantee that we'll be alive tomorrow, according to Kyle Shanahan, or on Sunday. He may know. By the way, here's a comparison. Here is the Les Snead answer just before the Jared Goff trade.
Oh, Jared Goff's he's a Ram right now. So what's the date?
Jared Goff is a Ram right now.
By the way,
he's gone 24 hours later.
Les Snead committed more to Jared Goff than Kyle Shanahan did to Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, I mean, he's playing the end of the world.
Well, here's why you have to trade Garoppolo, by the way. Let's say your plan is they're going to take Mac Jones, okay?
Okay, right.
There's no way they give up everything they gave up in that trade if they didn't know what they were taking.
Sure, so sure. They know what they're doing.
So let's say you keep Garoppolo, and your idea is we'll play Garoppolo for one more year until Mac Jones is ready, and then we'll throw Mac Jones in, kind of like the Chiefs did with Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes.
Sure, sure.
The problem is, if Garoppolo gets hurt, and he's been hurt 4 out of the last 5 years, going back to when he was in New England.
Yes.
It just ruins his trade value. You can't trade him anymore. Right now, you could probably get a 2 for Jimmy Garoppolo. That's what they traded to the Patriots to get
him. Yeah, yeah.
You could probably get a second-round pick. If he gets hurt again, I think he becomes untradeable.
Yeah, I
think he becomes Cam Newton.
I think he is an average quarterback. I don't think he's a great quarterback. I don't think he's the worst thing in the world, but I think he's lower middle of the pack. Would you agree with that?
I think he's Jared Goff. Wouldn't you say
he's in that ballpark? Yeah.
Yeah.
What's interesting, John, is if I look at the Super Bowl champions the last few years, Chiefs obviously won last year. The losing teams.
Well, the Bucks won last year, and the Chiefs.
Oh, I'm sorry, the Bucks won last year. The losing teams tend to bounce their quarterbacks.
So 3 years ago, the Rams. 2 years ago, the Niners.
New England was before that, the losing team. They had Tom Brady. He's gone. Atlanta was the losing team the year before. The Falcons are moving off of Matt Ryan now.
Well,
Carolina was before that.
The Patriots were the winning team against the Rams, and they bounced Tom Brady.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's true. But, I mean, there's no guarantee. Just because you get Super Bowl doesn't mean that you've got a long-term gig, apparently. If you're a losing quarterback, you are right on the verge of getting traded. So, John, I got an interesting email. Jorge, do you have the answer that Jeannie Buss gave when she said she was asked about the 5 most important Lakers of all time? It was from yesterday's show.
Yeah, Laura should have it in the system somewhere there.
She
but
was
anyway,
in the.
I can tell you who. Okay.
Well, here we've got it. We've got it. Go ahead and play it.
5 most important Lakers of all time.
Oh no! Don't ask me.
Yes, we're gonna put you on the spot.
Important.
Yes.
Or
5 most important Lakers of all time.
Okay. Well, then you know you have to start with Kareem.
Yes.
And you know Kobe, and LeBron. And, this is hard.
Magic,
yes, mm-hmm. Of course, Magic. Yeah, Magic might be number one. No, Kareem, I don't know. Like, it's so hard.
You got four, though.
Yeah, and important.
Phil?
Well, does he count as a Laker?
I mean, yeah,
okay,
absolutely.
Then Phil.
Now, I got this email from a guy named Joe Hawkinson. Do we know him?
Yeah, Joe used to be a baseball beat writer for the LA Daily News.
Oh, okay, great.
Joe's been on the show. He's been a guest on the show.
So Joe emailed and said, what about the top 5 most important Dodgers? And I started going through this, and it is incredibly tough to choose 5 Dodgers as the 5 most important Dodgers of all time.
Okay, but now we get Now, do non-players count?
Because yes, they absolutely do.
Okay, so Vin Scully has to be number one.
Absolutely number one.
And then
Jackie Robinson has to be a lock.
Lasorda is probably in there. Jackie Robinson, you're right, is a lock. Koufax
is there.
And I got one more spot.
This guy says Peter O'Malley.
Well,
this guy says Branch Rickey.
Branch Rickey would have been for the Brooklyn Dodgers. By the time they moved out here, Branch moved on, but he was the GM when they got here. You know, Jackie Robinson never played as a Los Angeles Dodger, so we can hedge a little bit there if we want to not count the Brooklyn years.
Fernando.
Well, Fernando. Jorge just threw Fernando out there because he was a cultural revolution, but was Fernando a better pitcher than Clayton Kershaw? I don't think so.
Probably not. He was more of a sensation, right?
Right. And then we also, if we do
what about
it that,
Walter O'Malley, who actually moved the team from Brooklyn to LA?
Yeah, it's very, very hard.
Yeah, I'm curious. 877-710-ESPN. I'm curious about this. The 5, according to you, the 5 most important Dodgers.
Well, the first thing we need to do is decide whether or not Brooklyn counts, kind of like whether or not Minneapolis counts for the Lakers.
Well, what do you think?
Well, I think if we're going to count the titles, and we do, then we have to include Brooklyn. And
okay,
if you include Brooklyn, you have to include Jackie Robinson in your 5.
Yes, absolutely. So I think the 2 locks are Vin and Jackie Robinson. And beyond that, I think it's a crapshoot from beyond then. I mean, you've got Lasorda, you've got Koufax, you got Peter O'Malley, you got Walter O'Malley.
Kershaw might be the best regular season pitcher of all time.
Yeah, yeah. 877-710-ESPN if you want to jump in on this. Also, you can tweet us at Venice Mace, M-A-S-E, at L-A Ireland. You can IG me at Venice Mace, M-A-S-E, and you can email us, venicemace@gmail.com. We'll do that coming up next for you. Plus, John, there is a very cool haircut making a comeback, and a PGA golfer has started the trend. Do you know about this?
Really? No.
I will explain it next. Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN. John, that right there.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's called the Mullet Song.
Okay.
And the reason we're playing it is that PGA golfer Cameron Smith, who back at the November Masters shot us in the 60s for four consecutive days, which that may be the first time anybody's ever done it, right?
No, no. Other people have done it, but he was the only one to do it at that particular tournament, I think.
And maybe still wasn't enough to beat Dustin Johnson.
Yeah.
But he did win a tournament in Zurich over the weekend.
Yeah, he's good. He's really good. I think he's Australian.
Yeah, he's got $15 million in career earnings, and he proudly, proudly wears a mullet. Here's what he said about that.
I saw a few of the rugby league boys at home doing it. It was a great time to do it during quarantine, just something fun, make people have a laugh about it. And I've just kind of kept it going. It's almost turned into my good luck charm, so it's not bad. I think it needs a little bit of a trim at the front. I'd really like to go full business at the front and party out the back, but maybe within the next couple months it might change up a little bit.
Business at the front, party in the back. Now, I can tell you that in Toledo, Ohio, John, when I was growing up, I proudly wore a mullet, and everybody wore a mullet.
Yeah, I have pictures of you in a mullet. I briefly rocked a mullet for maybe 6 months and decided it's not for me.
Business at the front and party in the back.
When I lived in Texas, it was a thing. Everybody had them. But
did everybody have them?
Yeah, but they're more work than just getting your haircut. But he's right about the pandemic thing. You know, there are a lot of people. Have you had a haircut in the last year?
I've had two haircuts in the last year.
Yeah, a lot of people have it.
Yeah.
Like Lisa cut my hair for the first 6 months.
Did she really?
Yeah, she did a good job.
Did she? She's good at it?
She didn't know.
It's like having your mom cut your hair.
Yeah, she was like remarkably good. And then now I've gone back to my regular girl, but that lives down by you. But
full
down by you.
Business at the front and party at the back. But
business at the front and party at the back.
Cameron Smith's young enough and good looking enough to kind of pull it off.
So yeah, he's pulling it off.
He starts a trend here.
He's got it working for him. He's got it working for him. Yeah, the mullet is very underrated, I think. The mullet is very underrated.
I think it's rated exactly where it needs to be rated.
Okay, so top five most important Dodgers of all time. Most important Dodgers of all time.
So here's where it gets a little complicated. Fernando Valenzuela was the perfect, like I always say that Shaq and Magic were the perfect combination of athlete and showman.
By the way, 877-710-ESPN if you want to jump in on this.
I think Fernando started a cultural revolution.
Yeah.
But if you like didn't know anything about Fernando Valenzuela and Clayton Kershaw and just looked at their statistics side by side, Kershaw dwarfs him. So I don't know if you can put Fernando ahead of Kershaw.
Kershaw?
Let's go to
Koufax.
Tim. Yeah, let's go to Tim on line one. Hey, Tim, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Hi, John and Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, man.
I think that what John just said is more evidence and proof that Valenzuela is ahead of Kershaw on the Dodger list. Because influence and fans and all of those things matter equally, maybe greater, than performance on the field for establishing a team. So I have my five Dodgers, if you don't mind.
Yeah, please.
Koufax. Scully. Walter Alston won pennants with the Dodgers 59, 63, 65, 66, and 74.
It's a good
call. Three decades, five pennants.
Yep.
Fernando Valenzuela and Lasorda, who didn't win as much as Alston, but his personality and ambassadorship, he embodied the Dodgers. So that would be my five.
I like that. By the way, I think Lasorda is almost a lock for this list, too, at least for me. Lasorda is an iconic figure who, you know, was part of the Dodger organization long after he stopped managing.
Although I would argue that Tim didn't have Jackie Robinson on his list.
Yeah.
And you got to have him.
Yeah, you got to have him.
I mean, he changed the game forever.
My locks are Vin, Jackie Robinson, and Lasorda. And then you know who I'm going with, John? I am going to go with Fernando because of the cultural revolution. And this will be controversial. I'm going to go with Andrew Friedman, who has been the mastermind of now 7 consecutive division titles, verging on 8, and 3 World Series appearances, including 1 win.
I actually like that pick. Andrew would refute it. But I think that if you look at what he's done since he's come here, he has it's the same reason that Jeannie should not take heat for putting LeBron on her list.
No.
Because LeBron has changed the future of the Lakers forever. Andrew Friedman has changed the future of the Dodgers forever. And so I don't think you deserve to be criticized for that pick. I think it's and by the way, isn't it interesting that other than Robinson, we haven't even mentioned an everyday player.
Yeah, that's
right. With all the great success of the Dodgers, the everyday players, the Dodgers are mostly known for big personalities as pitchers. And, you know, like, who's the best everyday player the Dodgers have ever had? I don't even know the answer to that.
You know, for a career as a Dodger or for just a particular...
No, I think as a career, would it be one of the, like, Garvey, Say, Lopes, Russell? Would it be... None of those guys are in the Hall of Fame.
Garvey, though, is really identified with the Dodgers.
Yeah, you can't say Manny because you don't know if he cheated and he wasn't here long enough.
Right.
Betts might be by the time he's done, but not yet. Kershaw's a pitcher. Do you know who the all-time leader in home runs for the Dodgers is?
I'll take a shot and say it's Eric Karras.
You're right. Eric Karras, and Eric's a guy, I'm friends with Eric, great guy, but he wouldn't even argue he's one of the great five.
Correct pronunciation of his last name, John?
Kersh.
We got that from Ross Porter.
A salute to our buddy Ross Porter.
We love Ross Porter.
I get Ross still listens to the show. I get notes from him every once in a while.
Like, take a shout out to Dodgers.
Shout out to Ross.
Yeah, shout out to Ross. Love that guy.
Yeah,
but it's very, very tough.
I think you and Tim have won me over on Fernando. I think because it was the exact, he's a Mexican pitcher in a community that is so heavily dominated by Mexican culture. You know, Mace, he used to pitch, you used to look at the attendance back then.
Yeah.
And it would be like 3-game series. 19,000, 20,000. Fernando would pitch on like a Saturday night, 49,000. Then on Sunday, back to 18. I mean, that just to see Fernando pitch. And, you know, is Fernando in the Hall of Fame?
No, he is not in the Hall of Fame.
But if there was a Dodger Hall of Fame, he'd go in first.
He'd absolutely
ballot.
Be in it. Yeah, no question. Yeah, there's some love for Roy Campanella here.
Yeah. Again, primarily, well, actually, he played in L.A. He got in his accident, I think, after the Dodgers had moved. Here's Steven on the phone. Hey, Steven, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Yeah. Hi, you guys. People are forgetting a baseball song that they hear all the time that refers to Willie and Mickey and the Duke. Meaning Duke Snyder.
Snyder. Yeah,
yeah.
And that,
Snyder,
by the way,
as an everyday player, look at his stats.
You're
and
right,
I think
Steven.
He lost 4 years in World War II, that his stats would have been even bigger.
Steven, he may indeed be the answer to greatest everyday player in Dodger history, especially statistically. That's a really good call. Thank you.
Ivan Lopez tweets, he won't make the list, but big shout out to Jaime Jarrín, who is in the Hall of Fame.
Right, and he's basically the Hispanic Vin Scully.
Yes,
I
exactly.
mean, that's the easiest way to describe him.
Yeah. Somebody says Frank McCourt. Yeah, those were the glory days. The glory days of Frank McCourt. Hershiser, now there's an owner for you.
Hershiser get a look here? Probably not.
Probably not. I mean, he's got the record.
Kirk Gibson, kind of solely responsible for the 88 title.
I think he only played here 1 year, didn't he? Did he play here for multiple years or 1 year?
Well, he was only an all-star for 1 year. He won MVP that year.
Right, right. Yeah, Gibson not here long enough.
Yeah,
Lasorda, Vin, O'Malley, Kershaw, Gibson for Cisco Rocks. He does have Gibson there. A lot of Kershaw love, a lot of Koufax love.
Here, Gil just tweeted in, Mike Piazza. That's a good answer.
Mike Piazza is a good answer.
Best hitting catcher maybe of all time?
Of all time. God, do you remember the day he was traded? I remember it so clearly. Do you remember anything about it?
I have a different memory than you do. I was on my way to cover a Laker playoff game in Utah.
Yeah.
And I was at the airport, and my boss called and said, when's your flight? I said, we're at the gate. We board in 20 minutes. And he said, the Dodgers just traded Piazza. She goes, if you've already checked in, your luggage is on the plane. I said, yeah. He goes, okay, go to Utah. We'll cover it from here. And I, you know, the amazing thing about that trade was I'm pretty sure Fred Clair, who was the general manager at the time, didn't know about it.
Fred Clair.
Yeah, Fred didn't know. Wasn't Peter Guber and the Fox guys that traded Piazza out from under?
It was the Fox guys, yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, John, you're totally wrong on the Mike Piazza thing. See if this rings a bell. So we were doing the show on the Trimalcast. We were on 690, 1150, and on Fox Sports West.
Okay.
And we were there the morning after the trade on TV and on radio.
Huh.
And we happened to have Christopher Cross as a guest.
The singer.
The singer. And Christopher Cross was going to perform Sailing. And so the guys we were working with set up a big screen there, and Christopher Cross sang Sailing Away while they showed highlights of Mike Piazza. Now, does that ring any bell at all?
No.
Oh,
no.
God. I remember that clear as day. Singer would back me up on
that. Yeah, there's a chance I wasn't there that day because I probably would have remembered that.
Sailing away. What a dark day that was. The Fox guys totally screwed the Dodgers up.
I'm trying to remember who came back in that deal. I know Charles Johnson came, the catcher.
Yeah,
Gary
Charles Johnson
Sheffield
came.
Sheffield came.
There was a really good reliever who came. Ended up being a closer, I think, for the Dodgers. Who won the Mike Piazza trade?
And Piazza basically played for the Marlins for like a month, and then they traded him to the Mets, right?
Yeah, exactly. So he was traded along with Todd Zeal to the Marlins for Gary Sheffield, who came here for some monster years.
Right. He was great.
Bobby Bonilla, who didn't. Charles Johnson, the catcher. Jim Eisenreich. Remember Jim Eisenreich?
Pinch hitter, yeah.
And a guy named Manuel Barrios.
Okay, so
those
no
are the guys
pitcher.
That came over. So they did get Sheffield, and Sheffield had some monster years for us. So, but trading Mike Piazza, the cornerstone of the franchise, was an absolute disaster. Absolute disaster for the Fox people. All right, tell you what, coming up next for you, John, there's at least one celebrity who doesn't say, don't you know who I am?
Huh?
I've got that coming up for you next. Mason, Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Oh, we love Tommy Chong. Mason, Ireland, 710 ESPN. What is going on? It is Tuesday. Hey, we like you guys. Thanks for listening. How about that, John? Was that better?
Poser.
I just said I like you guys.
No, that's fine.
I like you guys.
Who is the person who says, I never say, don't you know who I am? That's something that you may have used.
Never.
Not recently.
Here's a story. Guy and his kid show up at the IHOP. Okay. I don't know where this IHOP, I assume it was in Los Angeles, an IHOP. By the way, IHOP, very underrated, man. If you want a lot of sugar,
yep,
really fast.
Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruit.
Oh, killer. Killer. So, guy walks in with his kid. They say, sorry, it'll be a 30-minute wait. Guy says, you know what? I don't think we want to wait that long. We're going to go somewhere else. Then someone tells the hostess, you know, that was Adam Sandler. And she said, I had no idea.
What?
If I knew it was Adam Sandler, I would have made sure he got a table right away. But Adam Sandler never did the, don't you know I'm Adam Sandler? He did not play that card.
Good for him. You know, another guy that did that was, and this restaurant got heavily criticized for it.
Okay.
Was he went into a restaurant with his family.
Yep.
It was crowded. There was a 30-minute wait. He walked in. He said, how long for a table? They said 30 minutes. They waited for about 5 minutes. They said, you know what? We're going to go somewhere else.
Yep.
And it was in Milwaukee, and the guest was Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Oh.
In his free agent year.
Wow.
And he walked out, and the restaurant, like, felt terrible.
What are you
going to
do? He's, like, 7 feet tall.
And he's exactly 7 feet tall.
I mean, 7 feet tall, that's, you've got to stand out. Somebody's got to be able to say in Milwaukee, and, oh, that's Antetokounmpo.
You know, it's a reminder that not everybody likes sports.
Yeah, it's true. Not everybody does. Not everybody's in on this thing. All right, so Lindsay told me today that the UFC card that she watched over the weekend is the best UFC card in a long time. Lindsay, what happened?
Yes, it was. Well, I mean, I'm sure everybody saw the Chris Weidman, Uriah Hall fight where Weidman, he like leg kicked Uriah Hall and it snapped his own leg in half.
Yeah, I didn't see it, but I did see multiple times the announcer's reaction to calling it.
Yeah, Joe Rogan was hilarious. That went viral, his reaction to it. That was great. But he completely snapped his femur in half, which was crazy. But I was bummed about that because I was looking forward to seeing that fight because those guys have a lot of history. But the
and
whole card
happened,
was great.
It happened right in the beginning of the fight?
Yeah, it was like 15, 20 seconds into the fight.
I don't know which one of the Pauls, Jake or Logan Paul, one of them was at the UFC event.
Yeah, they're both obnoxious.
But one of them wrote kind of an open letter posted on social media to Dana White, basically calling out Dana White for not paying the UFC fighters. And his point was that he made more in his last fight than all of the UFC fighters combined because Dana White doesn't share the wealth. And I thought, you know, Dana White has said multiple times that he has no interest, you know, doing anything with Paul. You know, Dana said that before. He may come back and do that. But I found it interesting. You know, Dana is I think, smart. He's kind of grown that sport almost by the power of his personality. But if that's true, if he's not paying the fighters, Lindsay, isn't that a big deal?
He pays the fighters. They just get paid on scales based on their level of how good they are. And I think Jake Paul's thing has to do with, I mean, I'm sure that the UFC fighters agree that they should be making more money, but I also think that the reason why Jake Paul got paid so much money was because it was a joke fight. Like, it was a gimmick fight, and they had to pay people a lot of money to show up and be there and do the fight. I mean, it was a big TV production for a brand new company that just started.
So I just found this, Lance and John. The average UFC fighter makes $147,000 a year.
Okay.
That's up. Well,
they probably only fight once a year, once or twice a year.
Of all the fighters, 219 UFC fighters earned six-figure incomes in 2020. The highest-paid UFC fighter was Nurmagomedov. Did I say that right?
I think you did, believe it
or
not.
Yeah, Nurmagomedov. I screwed it up. Nurmagomedov, who made $6 million. The lowest UFC fighter, lowest paid, was Peter Yan, who made $230,000. So that gives you some perspective.
Okay, so here's what Paul wrote in his post. He says, in my third fight, I made more in total pay than any fighter in UFC history. Maybe it's time for you, he's talking to Dana White, to pay your fighters their fair share. No wonder they all want to get into boxing. Dana, you say you make the fights fans want to see. So hurry up and make Jones versus Nagano. pay them their fair share. 10 million purse for each guy plus pay-per-view. Why are the UFC fighters so underpaid versus boxers? Why did I make more in my third fight than all but two, Khabib and Conor, UFC fighters have in history? I know why. And he seems to be connecting the dots that Dana's keeping the money.
Well, it is an enormous.
Dana doesn't even. Well,
yeah,
first
Dana
of all,
doesn't own it. That's
he doesn't thing. Own. He doesn't own it. He sold like his majority share of the company. Second of all, the UFC fighters don't have a union. Like, this is still an up and coming sport. Like, to the general masses.
I don't think Jake Paul's in a union.
No. Jake Paul did his own thing.
But the only person that can commission these fights, who is the guy who runs UFC, which is Dana White. So if you go out and you speak out against him, he's not going to give you any fights, and then you're not going to be making any money because they don't have a union. I think that anyone will agree that the UFC fighters are probably underpaid, but I think that's just kind of like that's just the result of them not having a union, and it's still being somewhat of like a newer sport as far as like the popularity right. goes.
Yeah, I. By the way, it's owned by Endeavor, the agency here in town, talent agency. I mean, Dana White runs that thing great. And you know what? I agree with Lindsay. I mean, if they want to make more money, they could unionize and put the screws to them.
Or they could go to boxing.
So many UFC fighters aren't good boxers. Like, they're two completely different sports.
Yeah, not everybody's a great striker. Some people got to get on the ground. That's a good point. All right, coming up next for you is Fast Track. Hey, Andy the Destroyer Ruiz Jr. versus Chris the Nightmare Areola, arguably the two best Mexican heavyweights in boxing history, will square off this Saturday, May the 1st, in the Fox Sports PBC PPV main event. This PPV is an all-Mexican boxing extravaganza with three PPV undercard matchups featuring exciting all-action toss-up fights. The two-hour prelim show on Fox begins at 4 p.m. and features Cuban star and super welterweight champion Erlisandy Lara moving up to middleweight to face Thomas Lamana. PPV begins at 6 p.m. and is priced at $49.99. Buy the PPV now on foxsports.com/PPV or watch, and you can watch on any screen. Mason in Ireland, Fast Track is coming up next, 710 ESPN.